Afternoon. I'll call this meeting of the House Finance and Policy Committee to order and note that we do have a quorum present. Lee Johnson, have you had a chance to review the minutes from March 20th, 2024?
I have make a motion to approve.
Lee Johnson moves the minutes on March 20th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The minutes are approved. Members, we have two bills, and I see Representative Hurry here, so we're going to have let Representative Hurry go first. House File 4618. Welcome back to Housing, Representative Hur. I will move that House File 4618 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And Representative Hur, I understand you have an A1 amendment.
I do, Chair Howard.
Representative Hur, could you just briefly describe it?
Yes, the A2 amendment actually looks, it replaces the second page of the original amendment, Section 2. This was actually at the suggestion of Minnesota Housing in that for us to actually have the language so that it actually appropriates the funds from the correct from the correct area. So we're moving it away from a grant through a housing infrastructure to an appropriation from the Commissioner of Housing and Finance for a grant for Wilder Park. And so that's just the main part of it. And then it reduces the amount of the $100 million by the amount being requested for the appropriation through housing infrastructure.
Any discussion on the A1? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
The A1 prevails. Representative Hur, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Howard, and thank you, committee. So this bill is really important to me personally. This condominium park is called the Wilder Park Association, and it is in my district. And this condominium actually has, it's a 17-story high-rise condominium tower, 230 units. And these are owner-occupied, and they own these units, and they currently sell for about $75,000 to $125,000 per unit, and that the majority of the individuals living in this building who own their units here live under the what we would consider the HUD guideline for being the income level for below the units reporting income at or below HUD guidelines. And that's the respondents of a survey that was done, 94% of them actually lived at that level. But when we look at the totality, at least 65% of the entire building is at that level. And so this is a really important project for us. And I just want to set a little bit of the groundwork as to what we're needing this for, is that the $3.25 million is being requested is half of the cost of replacing the windows in this particular building. And the residents are taking the other half of that. And, you know, before we came to housing, we actually exhausted every possible option that we could. We had meetings with Senator Klobuchar and Smith's office, Representative McCollum. We worked with Family Housing Fund, the representatives from energy groups and who work in infrastructure. We talked with, you know, Habitat for Humanity, LISC, everybody that we could. We actually exhausted every option, and that this project did not qualify for any of the other money that was passed out of this committee, the $1 billion from last year. And so we are sort of at the last resort here, and that unless we are able to find a resolution for this particular issue to help our residents, we will literally be putting out hundreds of individuals who otherwise cannot stay in these buildings, and they are low-income residents again. And so we need to make sure that we keep them housed, and so that we can, you know, do what we say that we want to do in housing, is make sure that people from low-income communities stay within the housing that they have, so we don't have to displace them. So with that, I do have two testifiers here today, Chair Howard, and if that's okay with you, I would like to turn it over to them.
Thank you, Representative Hur. First up, we have Howard Ornstein. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and fellow Howard. Just introduce myself again. I'm Howard Ornstein. I live next to the high-rise building that is the subject of this legislation. And some of you know I'm a former state representative for the area just next to the building. And I volunteered to help with this project when I moved and found out that they had this significant funding shortfall. So I'm here as a volunteer, and I'm very grateful to Representative Hur for stepping up to help several hundred of her low-income constituents to stay in their homes. So, Mr. Chair, I know that you have many needs that you try to deal with in this committee. I watched the hearing from last week where you were hearing about the need for more housing infrastructure bonds, and I heard you refer to something you call the whole housing ecosystem. And So you have challenges in trying to meet every need in that ecosystem. But what we have found, as Representative Hurst said, in trying to get funding for this condominium building is that there's a niche here for homeowners that is not met by any other program, federal, state, local, the $1 billion that the legislature was able to allocate last year. So there's a gap in that whole housing ecosystem that we're trying to fit ourselves into. This is a senior housing building. It meets the HUD HOPA standards, which we certify every year. As Representative Hurst said, we took a survey, which she actually requested us to do before agreeing to author this bill, to document the need in the building. And we found that 94% of the people responding met the HUD guidelines, and over two-thirds of those meet the HUD guidelines at the lower two tiers, so the most affordable standards. 62% of the people responding to the survey reported Social Security as their primary source of income. So that gives you a sense of the demographics. 39% reported being disabled. So this is a low-income senior building with many disabilities that doesn't qualify for any other program. After almost 50 years, the building needs the windows replaced. The cost is significantly higher than most residents can afford. The representative Hurd documented our previous attempts to get funding. The extra cost, which is estimated at $25,000 to $35,000 per unit, that the windows will cost on top of regular HOA dues and their property taxes and their mortgages, is way beyond the ability of most of the residents to handle. And if they lose their homes, which I believe many of them will, if we can't offset some of the costs, the homes will go to the bank, and they will have nowhere affordable to go. And we'll miss them in the community. So we're here to ask for your help in including them in the benefits that the committee provided to other low-income people and other low-income seniors in the bill last year. Briefly to discuss the bill, Section 1 of the bill is different from Sections 2 and 3, but related. And people who have looked at the bill in the past have gotten confused because they're amending different sections of law. So Section 1 amends the HRA authorizing legislation. And so what this bill would do, it's permissive. It would allow a local HRA to assist in helping with this project. We've been told by the city of St. Paul that while they might want to help, they don't think they have the authority because of some oddities of our condominium ownership structure. So this language in Section 1 would address that. And then Sections 2 and 3 are what Representative Hurd described, which is the state funding, which would cover half the cost of the project at a revenue neutral basis by allocating just that portion to come out of the second year funding for the $100 million pot that's indicated in the bill. So thank you for considering this request. I do want to say we need the help now. The construction project is underway, and we can avoid very significant financing costs if we can get this state help now. Otherwise, those costs will have to be passed on to the low-income seniors in the building.
Thank you. Next, we have Janet Warwick.
Hello, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much for welcoming us here today, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm grateful for this opportunity to speak to you. Howard has spoken with you a little bit more about the legislative and some of the legal aspects, and I'd like to put a personal face on it for you as the representative of people who live in our community. I'm the president of the Wilder Park Association Board. People in our community have entrusted me with that responsibility. And so I'm here today in order to speak on their behalf. So I'm hoping, with Senator Hurd's assistance here, that we are going to be getting some help when we really have exhausted all efforts to find assistance from existing housing programs. Our building is old, and we need to complete a major life cycle repair in the windows. After value engineering to trim the costs wherever it was possible, the cost of the project was reduced to $6.5 million. We can't delay this project. As we've been told by the engineers involved in the work over the last 2 years, that the costs are increasing by about 10% a year, which means that we would be in a deeper hole if we waited longer. The cost of the project is simply way beyond the means of our low-income residents. As Howard mentioned, our demographic survey indicates that 94% of our residents meet the HUD low-income guidelines, with most of those in the lower two tiers. Because our residents are old and many are disabled, I am here representing them, and I would like to relay a couple stories to you. Lisa is a widowed Russian immigrant woman, 86 years old and very hard of hearing. She worked in the United States for many years as a preschool instructor, teaching the people of our next generations. She purchased her unit outright 6 years ago, thinking that her husband would be able to join her on the ground floor unit. He ended up becoming hospitalized, wheelchair bound to a greater extent, and never was able to move in. The county ended up stepping in to pay some of his bills at a nursing home where he was required to live. But when her husband has now died, when Lisa dies, then the county is going to come back and try to regain some of the funds that were paid for his care during the time that he was at the nursing home. Lisa says, "I worked all my life and did everything right. Now I stay up many nights worrying how to pay. I don't want to leave here, and where would I go?" The cost for Lisa's windows is estimated, with a $6.5 million bill for our window cost, to be $33,475. Helen is a widowed woman, age 93. She and her husband moved in only 3 years ago. His health declined, and Helen nursed him as long as she was able to. Now she is uncertain about what she is going to do. She doesn't want to sell her unit and move at the age of 93, but her assessment would be over $40,000, and with loan payments would require about a $200 a month payment for over 25 years. Another resident, Heidi, is in her 80s. She has a high mortgage, and she took out a second mortgage. Now she has only about 5% equity in her unit and little in savings. Her special assessment is almost $20,000. She says, "God will look out for me." That's a big challenge for us to face. Another female resident is Janet. Her fixed cost per month, not including food, run about $1,200. She receives a small SNAP payment to assist her with food, and currently she has received about 6 months of charity assistance for her medical bills. Her estimated windows assessment is about $10,650. These stories could be repeated by many of the other owners in our building. You could go door to door, floor to floor, and hear similar stories from all of our owners. The owners don't want to move at their ages, and most don't have another option of where they might be able to go. Our residents are looking to you for help. Thank you very much for your consideration and letting me plead our case before you. I hope my stories have fallen on welcoming ears. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming here, and thank you for sharing stories of your fellow residents.
Happy to do that. Thank you.
Next on the list, we have Dr. Jean Lee. Welcome to the committee.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Herr, thank you. I'm Jean Lee. I had Children's Hope International, which does legal advocacy and public policy, are our family centers, are our shelters, transitional permanent housing. We also do housing services, health care, and social services, and belong to a bunch of other agencies. I want to mention some of my background so you have some of the context. My family and I have been in real estate development, property management. I've been realtor and basically all the different positions in the housing industry. I rebuilt a three-story house after I built it up and a tornado hit it down, so I do know what it's like to use a hammer and nails and all those tools. The reason I say that is because I switched from being a corporate Fortune 500 corporate auditor to fixing some of the government systems to better serve Minnesotans. You have before you a copy of partial copy of my testimonies, which I won't duplicate much. But basically, I looked at this bill as far as covering what's called NOAA, the Preserving Naturally Occurring Affordable Housing. There are many seniors in our community, many have disabilities, and the problem with the funds is that we have seen funds being used, and I've handled some of the cases myself, by developers who are targeting seniors to get their homes. And as the woman said before me, some of these seniors and persons with disabilities have no place else to go, so that would make them homeless. And when you're talking about making a person homeless who is a senior or has disabilities, that's an early death for them. And so there needs to be changes in the system so that we prioritize seniors and persons with disabilities as far as giving them some of these NOAA funds so that they can live in place and thrive. The suggestions were made as far as preserving their homes and expediting the financial assistance that they would need. I don't know what the timeline is for the funds that they were talking about earlier, but it is very important to take advantage or meet some of the deadlines that they face. I also want to say that there should be disincentives for those using the funds to target seniors and persons with disabilities to take away their homes. I suggested solutions as far as the Home Heroes Act, House File 2614, delete all, and the legacy House File 4620, which has where you could do renovations and repairs and so forth cheaper than some of the other methods. Because I have construction experience, I know how some of these methods are. On the second page, there are comments as far as from Senator Klobuchar that says we must keep in mind, especially if we're talking about veterans, that there should be no waiting line for them to receive some of these benefits. And from Governor Walz and Lieutenant Flanagan, that when it comes to first responders receiving some of the funds, we have to think about that they are there sacrificing their lives to help us, and this is just a little bit that we can do to help them. I suggested a proposed amendment to this, and I'm not sure how it fits in, but basically we're saying that these are funds to preserve affordable homes, and seniors and persons with disabilities should come first. So definitely Representative Herr's bill should be funded. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll now move to member discussion. Representative Dodson.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Representative Herr, question I've got is I'm assuming that there's an association fee. Do you have any idea approximately what that dollar amount would be?
Representative Herr.
Chair Howard and Representative Dodson, I actually worked with the – I asked those same questions of the residents and of Mr. Ornstein when they came in, and I even asked them for a list of all the projects that they've paid for within their own out of the HOA fees, because I feel like before you come to ask for state dollars, you should have, you know, contributed what you needed to into your own projects. And so I can have Mr. Ornstein tell you how much it is per month, but what I can share with you is that the list that they gave me up until from just 2020 to present,
The amount that they've spent themselves was $2.2 million already, and they had to do investments in their garage, their roof, their exhaust fans, professional services for window repairs, their elevator, fire alarm system, hot water boiler, plumbing, electric, and valves. And so they've invested quite a bit and exhausted all of the funds within their HOA, which is why they're coming to the state now. I don't know if Mr. Ornstein has anything else he wants to add to that.
Mr. Ornstein?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Dotson. The HOA fees vary by unit, which is typical in a HOA, but the average is around $600.
Representative Dotson?
600, and we've got, what, 230 units, is that correct?
Yes.
How long have they been condoed in the individual units versus, I'm assuming it was probably an apartment building at one time, or has it always been condos?
Representative Representative Ornstein.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Dotson. The building was constructed in 1978 as a condo building. It was part of an effort by the Wilder Foundation and the City of St. Paul to provide housing for older people to move out of their homes in the neighborhood and to make more housing available for families in the neighborhood. And it was a big success at the time. It met those goals, and it also required that 25% of the units be set aside for low-income people. So it was a successful effort at the time, but as often happens, 45 years later, you know, they didn't provide for major life cycle costs like this that are not able to be borne by the people in the building, despite the fact that they do contribute to a capital repair fund, and that fund is used for significant projects, but there's no ability to fund a project of the cost of these windows.
Representative Dotson.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Representative Herr, I can appreciate what you're saying. Properties do require maintenance. Who is currently managing the association? Is it the Wilder Foundation, or is it a different independent group that actually manages that, and how long have they been managing that?
Representative Herr or Ms. Ornstein?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dotson. The property manager right now is First Service Residential, and they've been the manager for the last couple of years, as well as a previous stint before that with other companies in between.
Thank you, Chair Hord.
Any other member discussion? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I just want to make sure that I understand the request. So sounds like the second year of this biennium, the request is for $3.25 million, and I think you also said there's some recouping cost of that into the future as well. Can you explain if that's correct and how that money comes back?
Representative Herr or Mr. Ornstein?
Chair Howard and Representative Petersburg, I don't recall saying that there's a recouping cost, but that the project cost $6.5 million and they're asking for half of that. They're in a grant to Wilder Park.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I thought I heard Representative Hornstein say that the second year there'd be some mitigation of the cost, and so maybe that was my misunderstanding. Apologize for that. But this $3.25 million would occur this next year of this biennium. Is that correct?
Representative Herr.
Chair Howard, Representative Peterson, yes, that is correct.
All right. And then one more?
Yep.
And thank you. Could I also then ask, because the Section 1 includes this possibility for a lot of other buildings throughout the state, do we have an idea of how many other facilities could maybe qualify for additional future funding that fits within this category throughout the state or metropolitan area?
Representative Herr.
Chair Howard, Representative Petersburg, I asked that question as well, because I think that there's no way for us to know this, because this project did come from, you know, from us, but that what we did was try to put some parameters around situations that might be similar to this, and we made it very narrow so that, you know, there has to be a cost amount, the project has to be a certain number of years old. Then this is just so that then city councils can work with this HRA language, that they can work directly with the property instead of having to come to the state. We would have preferred to work with the city as well to get the funding for this, but they were saying that based on the current language, we didn't qualify the way that the building is structured now in order to receive assistance. And so that's this language just written in case others are in the same situation and allows this property to also qualify in the future.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you for that, and I think that's wise, and 2.8 makes it very specific as to where this money is coming from this year. However, it sets the parameters for future requests for additional specific funds for other projects that may come forward. And so I just want us to be aware that this kind of opens the door to other requests into the future that may or may not be feasible on that particular year. So just food for thought. Thank you.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Herr. I understand where this is coming from. I do have some questions and a few concerns on this. My understanding, there's 230 units in that building right now, and with probably seven that are vacant, I believe, six or seven. So of those units, do you know how many are rented or how many are privately owned?
Representative Herr.
Chair Howard, I think I'm going to defer that to former Representative Ornstein because he is more closely tied to the residents there.
Mr. Ornstein.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lee Johnson, all of the units are privately owned. It's a condo. Whether those owners rent a unit to somebody else, I don't know if Ms. Warwick has any numbers on that, but it would be very small.
Mm-hmm. Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Herr. Also, we know it's a condo building. Is it the association that actually owns the building then and is responsible for all the maintenance?
Mr. Ernstein.
Chair Howard, Representative Lee Johnson. So as with most condo associations, the individual unit owners own the space between their walls. And then the association owns the common areas. And in this instance, the association owns the windows. But the individual unit owners are responsible for all the costs of the common areas, the grounds, what goes on in their own unit they cover, and then the costs of all the common areas, including the windows, are shared by the percentages that are established in the bylaws and declaration. And then everybody has to pay monthly on those percentages, and then any special assessments such as the windows on top of that.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Herr, do you know about how many windows we're replacing with the $6 million, or a total of $6.5 million?
About 650 windows. And Mr. Chair and Representative Lee Johnson, in a high-rise building like this, sorry if I'm explaining something you already know, but it's not like you replacing a window in your house. There are big structural things that go into supporting these windows in a high-rise that add to the cost significantly, that you can't just go to Anderson Windows and get a deal on something. You know, it has to be uniform, and all the work has to be done by the same contractor. And so it involves a lot more cost than a home window repair project would.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, Mr. Hornstein, I understand that, and I actually looked into it, and we're looking at over $10,000 per window. $10,000 per window. What I've seen in talking to people in the industry, that's about three times cost. I don't know where this bid came from, but I would sure look into it if I were you, because that is outrageous. I don't know what to say on that part of it. We do know what he said, the average about $600 a month for maintenance. For the association do. That's $1.6 million a year. We know that maintenance is required, and I would assume that the association was looking at that issue a number of years ago with the building being close to 50 years old, that windows would have to be replaced and those things should have been put in place to do that maintenance. Every good homeowner plans ahead. I know I'm putting money aside for the roof I have to replace in about another 15 years. So I'm planning ahead. So I do have concerns on this. And Chair Howard, is this bill being laid over? Or because there's another concern, because this dramatically changes the rules for HRAs. I believe with the change in the language, it affects every HRA across the state. So this does need to go to state gov because of the change in the rules in Section 1. So I think something we have to look at, it's that it does need to go there, and I would suggest sending it there so they can also take a look at it, because this is a major change in those rules and a major change in the local authority of the HRAs across the state. So with that, I'll end it there.
Lee Johnson, this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. And Representative Herr, I'll go to any other member questions. If not, I'll go to Representative Herr for final word on the bill.
Thank you, Chair Howard, and thank you, committee, for this conversation. The truth is I'm open to having it go where it needs to go and making this bill better, because the truth is that I don't want to open this up. I don't think that there was a harsher critic than myself when the group came to me and asked me to carry this bill, because I am somebody who really looks at when public dollars are being used for private uses. Is that what we're here and we're charged to do? But when I look at the makeup of the residents who live in this building, and I look at the fact that I've sat in multiple meetings with them and explored and turned over every rock and explored every corner at the federal level, at the state level, at the city level, at the county level, in which they don't qualify for any programs, that this is the only option that we have. And they've been working on this for years. There's an urgency now because they've worked on it for years, trying to turn over every rock. And so we do need to do something about it now. And what I just want to address really quick is that I think that it is, maybe this is not what Lee Johnson meant to say, but that to say that every good homeowner would be planning for this, and I've met all of these homeowners, and they're good homeowners, but they are also low-income, senior, disabled homeowners, doing the best that they can. And then we could either choose to invest in this now, or we can invest in the fact that when they are homeless, then we will have to find places to shelter them. We will then understand the additional cost of taking care of somebody and their health needs because they no longer have a home. We can think about then how we care for them and make sure that they have food stability. We will have to deal with costs much greater than what we are going to be doing now, and that we can choose to help support those who are in vulnerable situations, or we can say, we're not comfortable with this. And I want to be very clear that, we have done earmarks and direct appropriations in, have always done so. And I do not think that this opens us up to having to do more in the future. I mean, I have a list of like the number of direct appropriations we've made over the years. And so I think it's important for us to remember that that's why we have to look at each individual case, because this is a very unique situation. And these individuals have worked really hard to own these units. And I want to remind everyone, these units only currently sell between $75,000 and $125,000. If you think about a $600 amount that you're paying to your HOA, that is a huge part of what the cost of you living in this unit is. And so for as much as we would want to say that they could be more responsible, I think they've been very responsible, and I hope that the committee sees that and supports this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Herr. With that, House File 4618 is laid over. Our next bill on the agenda is House File 4614, Representative Norris. I will move that House Bill 4614 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Norris, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Howard and committee members. Land banks have proven to be a valuable tool for promoting the development and preservation of affordable housing and Main Street businesses. One of the ways they achieve these goals is by purchasing and then taking title to property, holding it for a specified amount of time, and then selling it to mission-oriented owners. In other cases, they may offer financing with lending criteria that's tailored toward mission-driven housing, commercial, and multi-use developments. Land Bank Twin Cities has used these tools over 100 times since 2019 to acquire, preserve, and rehab affordable housing. Not only has this approach helped the occupants of these properties directly, but it also helps to revitalize communities. For instance, Land Bank's properties in Minneapolis collectively had an initial assessed value of $50.7 million, but that has grown to a current assessed value of over $235 million dollars. However, for this approach to be successful, Land Bank needs capital available to facilitate these deals. House File 4614 would direct funds to this purpose. I appreciate the bipartisan support for this concept, and I have several testifiers here who can share more about the proposal.
Thank you. We have a list of testifiers. First, we have Tom Streets.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Howard.
Welcome to the committee.
Representatives, I also would like to thank Representatives Norris. Thank you, number one, for being such a strong proponent of the land bank, Abaje, Representative Cha, and Petersburg. They had a great conversation. Thank you. I'm Tom Streits, co-founder of the Land Bank Twin Cities and current president of the Land Bank Twin Cities.
Keep me on your toes.
Yeah, I'm ready. Right. I founded the Land Bank in 2009 during the height of the foreclosure crisis as I watched hundreds of low-income homeowners lose their homes and their life savings and their dreams as a result of predatory lending to large multinational corporations that had no connection or long-term interest in the community. The inspiration for the Land Bank was simple back in 2009 when I created it. To have a locally owned and controlled financial partner to benefit low-income families with long-term interest in mind. Since our founding, the Land Bank has been a force for good in our community, as evidenced by the sheets in front of you that demonstrate all the work we've done throughout the entire seven-county metro area. And we've created thousands of new rental units and hundreds of new low-income homeowners, many homeowners of color. Everyone's aware of the disparity gap between white homeownership in our state and people of color, so it's very significant. We have also assisted, as Representative Norris said, neighborhoods in preserving historical assets, such as the Victoria Theater, and nonprofit community partners like Indigenous Roots, who now own their own buildings. And finally, we are assisting a group of Latino families in South Minneapolis who were victims of a slumlord to purchase and now manage and own their buildings. It's an incredible accomplishment. We're very proud of it. It's called Sky Without Limits. It was written up in the New York Times by Matthew Desmond. Highly recommend that you read it at some point. The Land Bank, having successfully assisted our neighborhoods weather and recover from the foreclosure crisis, now faces another type of metastasizing corporate threat to their stability, and that is the wholesale purchasing of single-family homes by private, large equity firms with no connection to Minnesota, no connection to our communities. Homes in our neighborhoods are now a commodity to be bought and sold by outside investors with no regard to the long-term benefit of our neighbors and our communities. The Havenbrook portfolio of over 800 homes located largely in North Minneapolis, Brooklyn Park, and Brooklyn Center is a perfect example the unscrupulous behavior of these large corporate investors. As many of you know, A.G. Ellison has sued Havenbrook, and they recently entered into a settlement. The Land Bank is now actively competing to buy these Havenbrook homes as they go on the market and to create sustainably restore them. When we buy the homes, we put in new boilers, we put in new windows and a new roof so those low-income homeowners don't face a tragic, sudden expense that will cause them to lose their home. Shortly, you will hear from David McGee, president of Build Wealth, who's been one of the great partners in our community, building homeowners of color and low-income people, working through African-American churches for many, many years. Proud to say, David, we've worked together for a long time, and I helped David get his first 10,000. Here we are years later, and he's created many, many homeowners. The funds allocated to our proposed land banking pool will allow us to purchase and restore these homes and create local homeowners and bring much needed stability to our neighborhoods. The pool of funds will also be used into rehabilitating these homes to green community standards, as I shared previously. By funding this bill, you will allow us to buy hundreds of homes from investors and create new sustainable local homeownership in our community. And so now we've come full circle. 2009, the big threat facing homeowners in Minnesota and across the country was the foreclosure crisis. Here we are in 2024, and the confrontation now is between large literally Wall Street investment firms who are seeing housing as a commodity to be bought and sold with no regard to our neighborhoods and long-term stability. I encourage you to please join us, learn more about the land bank, and I appreciate your support, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Next, we have David McGee. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. McGee.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Welcome, Chair, Representative Baja, and the rest of you who have been so supportive for Build Wealth Minnesota in the last session. Thank you very, very much. It's going to go a long way. I'm here today, and I've been working with the land bank, as Tom said, technically since they started, since back in 2009. Build Wealth has been a partner with them, helping them with down payment assistance and some other things. More recently, Build Wealth is a developer as well. And so we're a nonprofit developer, considered a minority developer. And had it not been for programming like the land bank providing low interest loans and subsidies in alignment with the city of Minneapolis, there's a number of homeowners that would not become homeowners because of some of these subsidies and the discounts. It's allowed us to actually go in and acquire land. We've done a lot of infill development through this program where we've actually changed neighborhoods that had 4 and 5 vacant lots on the block, on one block in North Minneapolis. We've actually filled them. I look at it as doing dental work and bunch of busted teeth, and we actually went in and put new homes in those spaces thanks to this program and filled them with homeowners. Build Wealth has been working on closing disparity gaps since 2005, and the one challenge we have right now, we've been doing great, and you guys funded the 9,000 Equities Initiative to get 9,000 homeowners into homes by the end of 2028. And we got off to a wonderful start in 2022. We put nearly 600 homeowners in homes. And then the next year and a half, we only put another 500. And we're up against multiple new barriers. We've got the interest rates have doubled, making it almost impossible for families to buy affordable houses without this type of subsidy and help with the land bank. In addition, the inventory is at nil, very little inventory for these families, and so, and the prices have went up. So we have three new barriers that we're up against. And so being able to acquire some of these houses, I've been going out looking at the houses that some of these investors that are not from Minnesota, and the houses are not, are run down, haven't been really well maintained. And they just need a little tender loving care and a little upgrade and a little support from the state and others to get some of this inventory and put it back on the market to some homeowners that are going to live there and take pride in their neighborhoods.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have Garrett Peterson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is Garrett Peterson. I am the program manager of strategic acquisition at Land Bank Twin Cities, and I've been asked to share with you today about a project I'm working on in collaboration with the City of Minneapolis called the Single Family Investor Ownership Intervention Pilot Program. You can thank the city for naming that one. Before I speak to the specifics of the pilot program, I first want to provide some valuable context, which Tom, wherever he went, touched on before. In recent years, private equity investment firms have identified an opportunity to increase profits for shareholders by diversifying their portfolios to include single-family rental homes. To provide a sense of scale, the four largest investment firms own close to 200,000 properties throughout the United States, and approximately 3,000 properties concentrated in the Twin Cities metro area. This places the interests of out-of-state shareholders against the interests of income-limited working-class residents. These practices extract resources from our communities and reduce the availability of affordable single-family homes on the market for first-time home buyers. The Single Family Investor Ownership Intervention Pilot Program seeks to increase affordable home ownership opportunities by breaking apart these large investment portfolios and returning these single family homes to homeowners at affordable prices. In collaboration with the City of Minneapolis and our value-aligned developer partners like Dave McGee and Build Wealth Minnesota, we are identifying, acquiring, rehabbing, and reselling these single family properties to owner-occupant homeowners with incomes at or below 80% area median income. To make a significant dent in these large investor-owned portfolios and return these single-family homes to community ownership, additional funding will be required. A land banking fund would be a significant contribution to scaling this work. Thank you.
Thank you. And last, we have Eddie Ladenberger.
Mr. Chair, I don't think anybody needs to speak at this point.
Oh, okay.
For the save time for the committee, and I can answer any questions. And,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
We will go to member discussions. Are there member discussions? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Just a quick question, and this is to you, Mr. Chair. So if you decide to put this in your bill, do you have any idea on what numbers you're going to put in for the request?
Representative Petersburg, we are laying it over for possible inclusion,
right.
So I don't have a figure for you.
Okay. All right. Well, just checking. Thank
you. Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, just have a couple questions for the testifier or Representative Knorr. I'm just wondering the number of single-family homes that is owned by a land bank trust, Twin Cities.
Mr. Chair, Trice. Representative Lee Johnson, is that correct? We buy and sell properties. We hold them for a period of approximately 2 years, often less. So we are not a developer. We buy the property. We work with the developer, bring it up to green community standards, and sell it. So currently in our portfolio, Eddie, I don't know how many single-family homes we have, but 30.
Lee Johnson?
All right. Chair Howard, the testifier, thank you for that information. Does that include all 28 LLCs that Land Bank Twin City owns?
Yes. So when we buy a property, we form an LLC to buy the property. That way we can segregate the properties and sell them later to developers.
Lee Johnson.
Thank you. Chair Howard, the testifier. I was just trying to figure out why there's 28 different LLCs under this. The same nonprofit.
Yeah, we've literally formed. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, sir. Yeah,
Lee Johnson, Representative Lee Johnson. Thank you for that question. It's a great question. I'm a lawyer, and what we do is we form LLCs when we buy property. It's simple liability protection. So we have formed hundreds of LLCs. And I'll also point out to that question. I think it's relevant that we're a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Any money that is coming into that 501c3 nonprofit corporation goes back into the pool to buy more properties.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Norris. I want to thank you for that information. There's brought up of talking about the corporations that are not nonprofits, but they're investment properties. There's a bill dealing with that. Under the Obama administration, people were told to do that. Buy them, fix them up, rent them, and get them back on the market, which is important to get them on the market and help with the housing industry. Right now it's in crisis. We don't have homes. We have a lot of apartments, but we don't have homes, and that is an issue. We've got to figure out a way to get more homes, and seems to be they're doing some work getting homes. Besides the 30 single family homes, how many apartment complexes does Twin Cities, Land Bank Twin Cities, have in their control right now?
Mr. Streitz.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Lee Johnson, thank you. Great questions, by the way, and I appreciate you for asking them. If you look at this handout that was provided, 2024 legislative fact sheet, it says 2019 erroneously, by the way, it should say 2009 to 2023, 110 plus transactions, unless that 2019 number, Shanna, is correct. Okay, I'm sorry. That is correct. Since 2019, 110 transactions, $58 million invested in the community, 64%, which was land banking, 1,100 units of housing and 12 commercial developments created, preserved, $1,300 on average increase per unit in annual property taxes. At the end of the day, since 2009, we've bought and sold thousands of homes. And what I'd like to say is that, once again, in the foreclosure crisis, what I saw, I was the City of Minneapolis' housing director, is thousands of units, tens of thousands, millions of units across this country of home ownership were lost. They were turned into rental. Our mission from day one is to buy them back, get them in great condition, and sell them to homeowners. We appreciate rental. We help renters. As a matter of fact, as I mentioned earlier, we are working in South Minneapolis to preserve roughly 260 units of rental housing so the tenants can own them and manage them. So we're proud of that. But home ownership is really what this initiative is about. We'd like to get some of these rental homes back out of these national corporate interests into our communities and local ownership with local people who are investing in their neighborhoods. They're safer. They look better. People feel better. Health benefits go up. I believe in home ownership. I also believe that renters need a place to be as well. But if we can get people over the hump into home ownership who are low income, we all know they build wealth that way. A la David's name of his entity, and they have a stake in their communities. So that's the ultimate goal. But along the way, we are engaged in multiple transactions to help local renters as well.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, just testifier. You've been preaching what I've been preaching. We got to get people to build their wealth and their equity, because that's generational wealth. I remember the foreclosure crisis and the burst of the bubble very well, because I was actually serving the foreclosure papers.
Oh.
There's a few times I felt really bad for the people, but a lot of times I didn't, because when I went to go serve those papers, they had their brand new Escalade, their two brand new ATVs, their brand new boat, their brand new pickup, their brand new snowmobiles, but they weren't making their mortgage payment. They put their priorities in the wrong place. They weren't willing to give up the toys to keep the home for their kids. And so I didn't feel sorry for them, because they made a decision, a poor decision, and they just didn't care. So that's the unfortunate part of it. So I understand exactly what happened. And during that time, the Obama administration asked people to start buying these houses if they could and getting them on the market for rental so that some people had a place to live, because we didn't have apartment buildings at that time. No place for people to move to. And they were had issues that way. So I understand what you're trying to do. I think overall it's a good concept. But I do have concerns, because we have some other issues, and I'm not sure how much money we're going to have for this program. I like the concept that you're doing, but I get concerned when I see 28 LLCs on your 990 form. It makes me wonder if you're hiding things, because just as you stated yourself, you're a lawyer. As the nonprofit, you can be. An LLC, and I don't think you need to have 28 to hide different things everywhere. So it's a concern that I have when I look at your 99. Thank you.
Mr. Streitz.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you, and Representative Lee Johnson, thank you. Come on over to the land bank. Let's have a cup of coffee. I'll show you how it works. It's what every real estate investor does. You form an LLC in order to protect yourself from liability. Our 990s are open. Our books are open. We're a group of happy warriors over here, just trying to get homeownership and renters in our community having local control so we can build our neighborhoods. And I can tell you this, as the housing director in 2009, I felt pretty helpless when the tsunami of foreclosures came through that you saw. I tried not to make personal judgments about why someone was being foreclosed, but I did see people's dreams being killed. I saw their life savings going away, and I thought, if there's one thing we can do, create an entity here, a land bank, with the long-term community interest in mind, keep the money in the community, keep neighbors in the community, and help them thrive and their children thrive. And really, there's no secret to it. I just have a way of getting things done, and there's nothing to be hidden. So come on over and let's have a cup of coffee. I'd love to do it.
Representative Cha.
I think Representative Norris is an attorney too, aren't you, sir? Yes. Well, in 2007, 2010, I was a mortgage broker, and I saw millions of people lost their homes. And I wish that there was such a program back then, because it could have saved a lot of people and could have put a lot of people into owner-occupied homes. And so I appreciate the creative solution you guys are trying to create to solve a problem that needs to be addressed in Minnesota. I just want to give us some numbers to think about when we think about home ownership, because this is what we're facing in America right now, is that we have hedge funds coming into America right now buying up billions of dollars of home. For example, Tricon, a Canadian company, owns 38,000 single-family homes, which is about $3.5 billion. Right? We have American Homes for Rent, 59,000 homes in America. Invitational Homes, 84,000 single-family homes in America. And we have Blackstone, who just merged and purchased $9.5 billion of single-family home units in America. This is what we have to contend with here in Minnesota. And so we need to come together, get some solutions together, and find a way to curb this, because I am concerned, you know, and I'm concerned for our communities. And when I look at this, it looks like an organic way to keep local ownership into our homes. So thank you for bringing this bill forward.
Representative Dodson.
One quick question. Most land banks require equity split, correct?
Mr. Streit?
Most land banks require an equity split when you liquidate the property. What do your splits look like?
Representative Howard and Representative Dotseth?
Yep.
We don't split money in the land bank. It's a 501c3 entity. So there's approximately 27, 28 in the country. Most of those land banks are governmentally controlled, and those land banks receive property tax exemptions, something that we would like to see as well. We were here earlier this year to talk about that. But we are a 501c, so there is no equity split. If we buy, so let me give an example of this single family home. This is how it works in North Minneapolis right now. Havenbrook has approximately 800 homes that they've purchased. They're going on the market. And when they go on the market, we're paying approximately $225,000 for that house. And David and our Garrett here and Eddie are walking through them. They're literally stripped. I mean, no one's going to move in. And so we're putting in new windows, new boilers, new roofs. We then turn around and sell it to a nonprofit developer like David. He comes in, oversees the rehab work, and brings in a buyer at 80%. They pay us back the money we spent to buy the house, that's it. And the subsidy to get that down to 80% of AMI is something the city of Minneapolis is providing. So our pool constantly revolves, and this pool would be a revolving pool as well. So the money that comes back, the $225,000 that we paid for the property, comes back into the land bank, and then we buy more properties. Does that answer your question?
It does. I'm assuming there's probably an administrative fee that you charge for that?
There is, yes. Okay. Yep.
And so, what does that makeup usually look like?
Mr. Streit.
Yes. Chair Howard, thank you. Representative Dotseth. So, Eddie, about $1,500 per unit. We're not getting rich over there. And, you know, like I said, we're a group of people. This is not some scam. It's not some insidious corporation. We literally have our books are open, and I would love to spend time with anybody talking about it. I had the opportunity, Mr. Chair, to sit down with Representative Petersburg, and I asked him for 5 minutes. He gave me 30, and we learned a lot together, and I learned a lot from him. And, you know, we are just local people who are trying to create homeowners and renters and providing them a decent place to live in a world where, you know, people in outside interests see housing as a commodity. They think of it as a car or a cup of coffee. These are places where people live and their children are growing up, And so to me, there's a big imperative here, just not from an economic point of view, but from our neighborhood stability point of view. What kind of future do we want to have? Is it going to be owned all by corporations in Waconia? I don't know. I mean, is that the best? I don't think it is. I like to see people next to me who care about where they're living, their children are thriving. So it's very personal for me. I just think it's we have to do something in the face of this onslaught. And I'm sorry for the sermonizing, Mr. Chair. I apologize.
No need to apologize. Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just thank you to Land Bank, Twin Cities. Representing in my community in District 65B, we have a great organization, the West Side Community Organization. I just remember prior to being here as an elected official, I got to learn a lot about Land Bank through the Bush Fellowship Initiative that WESCO was able to partner with Land Bank in their first stages of getting tenant unions and seeing what the opportunities for renters to be owners. And this project was like a first of that pilot series that has been so important to my constituents that were able to own their homes, and for some who are not homeowners, have the opportunity to set goals to what that looks like. And I'm quite familiar with the Indigenous Roots Project, and that's such a champion work for our city of St. Paul, the collaborative efforts that go, the cultural spaces that it provides for not just tenants and union rights advocacy, but also for entrepreneurship and opening up kitchens and cultural spaces. So, you know, the work that you guys have been doing is just, it goes beyond from just creating home ownership. It's about collaborative efforts and community engagement to become homeowner and engage in recognizing the literacy that goes with renter to homeowner. So thank you for the work that you're doing. These prestigious foundations like the Bush Foundation, you know, they know who they're working with. And so I appreciate the steps that you're doing to come to the state to continue these projects throughout the state. Thank you.
And I'll go to Representative Norris for the final word, but just wanted to make a comment. Thank you for bringing the bill forward. Thank you for presenting, for all the work you do. It sort of fits, from my perspective, what we need to be in, which is an all-hands-on-deck mode in pursuing new, creative, all kinds of ways to attack our racial home ownership gap and create housing for folks. And so I appreciate the bill. I appreciate your work. And I'll go to Representative Norris for the final word before we lay it over.
Thank you, Chair Howard. As Representative Cha mentioned, I am an attorney, practice in the corporate law space, and if I saw a 501c3 that had a real estate portfolio and had an LLC for each of those properties, I would say that that's a well-counseled 501c3 that has created a corporate structure that is designed to best protect the charitable assets with which it has been entrusted. Overall, appreciate the enthusiasm amongst the committee for this approach to promoting home ownership, and appreciate the bipartisan support, and hopefully that enthusiasm and bipartisan support can translate into finding some resources for this proposal when we put together our omnibus as a committee. So thank you, Chair Howard.
Thank you, and with that, the bill is laid over. Members, that concludes our business, and I'll note we're not going to be meeting tomorrow, and so our next meeting will be after the legislative break, so I just want to wish everyone, every member, every staff member, everyone in attendance, safe travels if you're traveling somewhere, or even if it's just home, safe travels tonight, and we'll see you next week. With that, we're adjourned.